You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ12. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ12 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
I've given literally thousands of doses of crack to people and studied their behavior and published it in the scientific literature. Do you think my federal government would allow me to do that if crack was causing all these problems? Not no, but no.
What made you come to the point to say, instead of just studying it, I actually need to use heroin?
You never had cocaine if you say some dumb like that. I mean,
first of all, respectfully, don't call what I say dumb, because you got to check that at the door. You can't tell me that our use of crack is going to be beneficial to us empowering ourselves and going against systematic racism and dealing with these devils. I don't care what kind of goddamn research you say, it ain't going to turn a man into a soldier to take care of his family.
This is more of an issue of human rights and bodily autonomy.
Do people really have autonomy? I'm not sure what your belief is around God as a scientist. Why is it that I get that feeling?
The 1914 Harrison Act articles were published that black people who take cocaine became better marksmen, more murderous, unaffected by .32 caliber bullets. Obama's drug war was a lot worse than Nixon's drug war.
Every marketing company is utilizing billions of dollars to keep you using their product. There's a real lived personal experience that people have with individuals that they know have used drugs.
My message is not for people who don't think.
Loneliness is the epidemic of our time. There's no social connection.
There's no social connection. No social connection.
Peace Family is 19 Keys. Thank you for watching High Level Conversations. We want to continue to be the best show in the world, so we need your support for that. So if you enjoy this conversation, if you enjoy the value of this channel and the rest of these High Level Conversations, please help spread the word. If you haven't already, please leave a 5-star review. And the best reviews, we will screenshot and post on the High Level Conversation page. And you will win one of many gifts that we have. We also need you to like and we need you to comment so we can be at the top of the algorithm. We're building out the platform that's going to take the culture forward. And every conversation is a piece of the puzzle so that we can elevate the consciousness of the world. Whether you're a small business or a big business, we have different packages that you can come in and help sponsor episodes so we can take things to the highest level. Now, I don't want to take up too much of your time, but if this is an exciting offer for you, then go to 19keys.com/HLC so that you can join the High Level team. I appreciate you for being here, and I appreciate you for watching this episode. Continue to stay high level. Peace, family.
I speak in a more philosophical tone when we talk about things, but I also want to make sure that I engage the audience to reduce harm in real life, to make sure that the narrative doesn't seem promotional towards drug use, but more so educational to our ignorance of drug use, right? So I gotta ask him about him smoking heroin, ask him if he smoked crack, right? And we have to talk about narrative warfare, which I think ultimately he's going to, but then we gotta talk about cognitive security. Yeah, every conversation requires a multidimensional approach because you're thinking about the different levels of vulnerability that each mind has. So from very complex consciousness to very reduced, you know, hyperfrontality, meaning that, you know, a lot of people don't have a lot of activity in their prefrontal cortex when it comes to the region responsible for decision making, self-control, long-term planning, and moral reasoning. So therefore, if you're dealing with people like that and you have their attention, which a lot of people online are addicted to content, so they're watching, they already have hypofrontality, right? And so with that reduction, you have to make sure that your influence, right, is not encouraging already negative behavior, right? Because you can be very influential in your word and you have to make sure that the context goes into it. So having a conversation around you know, let's say cryptocurrency, you have to make sure that it doesn't come off promotional in the sense that you're telling people to go out there and gamble, but it has to be educational, but it can't be too bleak to where you create this nihilism viewpoint of it as well, because then that becomes you, you know, pushing your own narrative and propaganda on people that can keep them away from opportunities, right? And then when we look at a conversation like this, when we talk about drug use, given that it hits home, you know what I mean, so heavy, I'm thinking about my own personal objectivity that I have in it. I'm thinking about the audience that's directly in front of me who is more positive on drug use, but then my personal stances as a Muslim who doesn't believe in recreational drug use, but then talking to a foremost expert who actually believes in recreational drug use and believe in narrative warfare and taking back the control of that narrative, but he speaks from a fact-based mindset. So you have to deal with him as a scientist as well, even though his ideas may be considered on the fringe. So as people are listening to this, they're going to want to go with no nonsense, no drug use at all, which also comes from the narrative warfare, comes from the war on drugs. So we have to go into the history, because I think something powerful can go into what is the reframing of the drug use in the Black community. Are we framed as the bad drug users when white people use as many drugs as Black people? The way we were framed is like crack babies, right? And crackheads, right? Like all of these narratives was so that you can demean the people who uses a certain type of substance that's scheduled and classified a certain way. And you connect and associate those people with that. And it further allows you to demean and push more warfare by dehumanizing those people. So understanding our history and our relation to the narrative of drug warfare, and then understanding the complexity of how things have shifted into a digital age where people do have addictive behaviors, right? People are going to therapy, they're self-diagnosing. So you have to be careful. So that goes into doing a lot of research. So I'm gonna research their points. I'm gonna research my points. I'm gonna research conflicting points on both our ends. I'm gonna research strong arguments, bad ones. I'm gonna think about the narrative that we're conjuring and producing that we're gonna be putting out into the algorithm so that it's contextually responsible, so that an individual doesn't take it from their own personal viewpoint and utilize it to reinforce the biases that they want to already, you know, commit to. So there's a lot of work that goes into having a responsible platform beyond clickbait, because we can easily go on there and say, yo, you know, there's nothing wrong with drugs, and that's going to go viral, right? But when that's done going viral, how much harm have you created in somebody's life that gave them the go-ahead and the green light to go use drugs as a way to diagnose some of their personal issues that they're dealing with, shame and guilt and trauma and depression and oppression, right? So I think it's very important that you think of things in a very nuanced way and a multidimensional way as you approach conversations. And if you can't do that, then don't do it at all.
All right, how you doing today, good brother?
Good, man.
Excellent, excellent. I had the pleasure of sitting back and taking some notes as I was listening to you, right? Very bright, intelligent brother. And I respect the work that you've done, particularly in this field. As I was doing my research, I was enlightened about a lot of things that, I mean, you do specifically. And I had a private, close conversation with you, and you were speaking on how, you know, you don't consider yourself a global thought leader. You spend time focusing on one thought, right? And particularly it comes to drugs and drug use and narrative warfare around drug use, right? I'm big on narrative warfare, being somebody that is in the public. And I'm big on cognitive security, given that a lot of our people are soft targets for manipulation, right? I first want to start with the narrative on the war of drugs, right? And how anything associated to us has been condemned as negative, right? And the effects that that have had on history, right? Can you give us an overview on Nixon's war on drugs, right, and how it affected our association with crack and hippies with marijuana?
Yeah, so thank you for that question. I'm gonna start, since we're in the Bay, I'm gonna go back to the first federal drug laws passed in the country, which were 1914, right? Since we're in the Bay, before 1914, people in the U.S. Congress and American citizens in general
just found the notion of restricting psychoactive substances or telling people what they can put in their bodies, they found that notion absurd. They were not going for it. So in 1909, we tried to pass laws that would restrict opium products. We wanted to do this in part because of our racism that we had displayed against Chinese Americans who had come over to help build the railroads. And so we wanted to show China some favor because we wanted to trade with them. And so we promised them that we would pass some laws to restrict opium because they had been forced to take opium from the British. And so we wanted to show them that we were in solidarity with them. So in 1909, we tried to pass laws restricting opium. It didn't pass. The Congress was not going for it. So you fast forward to about 1914. Now we have, we're going to add to that law, cocaine. And we have the cocaine, cocaine craze, Southern Negro. That's what they called them, or something of that nature. Articles were published that black people who take cocaine became better marksmen, more murderous, and unaffected by .32 caliber bullets. And so Southern police forces moved away from the .32 caliber weapon to the .38 caliber weapon. Sound familiar? It repeats itself throughout history. The law passed. The 1914 Harrison Act, it's called. It restricted access to cocaine and opium-based products. That's the first law, 1914. So we have these people to enforce this law. And then in 1919, we passed prohibition. So now the folks who are enforcing prohibition are also enforcing the drug law. 1933, we overturned prohibition. You got all these narcotic officers with nothing to do now because you overturned prohibition. Now you have to find another drug. We find marijuana associated with Mexican Americans, Black Americans. Now we ban marijuana to make sure that the Bureau of Narcotics budget stays the same. They get more officers. That's the pattern. That's where we start, right there. Fast forward to 1970, when Nixon's drug war was going on. Nixon, we credit him as the sort of father of the more current drug war, but really, Nixon just made the announcement. Nixon had his sort of drug budget, had more work with treatment, although he said a lot of horrible things about drug users. But his actual drug budget, people were not being arrested like they would be under Bush number one, under Bill Clinton, and subsequently. But Nixon was the guy who we credit with the sort of being the father of the recent drug war because he said the words drug war. But don't get it twisted. Obama's drug war was a lot worse than Nixon's drug war. More people went to prison under Obama than they did under Nixon. But they also under Clinton, also under Bush 1, also under Bush 2, and subsequently. And so that's where we're at today. And the pattern stays the same. The goal stays the same. The goal is to make sure that these budgets, law enforcement, pharmacies, a number of people who have benefited from the drug war, that their budgets stay high. Today, our drug war budget is $45 billion a year.
So narrative warfare is strategic manipulation of stories, right, language, specifically to distort perception and beliefs and manipulate the mind with or without consent, right? Specifically without consent in this case. And as my brother goes over the history and you hear, number one, we forget about capitalism when we talk about these things in the business, right, in the government. They want to change certain laws
right? And the military wants to spend more money, and they want to find the easiest route in order to utilize different ammo, connecting it with the fears, right, of whites in Jim Crow era would be the easiest way, because we don't realize how much systematic racism and white supremacy is very clever in utilizing the fear of the average white man, right, to implement some of their ideas. So when I hear, you know, they changed the bullet sizes, or they show the crazed cocaine Negro who has an excellent marksman and harder to kill. Number one, the literacy rates of whites at that time were very low. So it was most likely propagandist cartoons that they was pushing out. The same way today there's memetic warfare, to where people don't actually understand much. They just look at memes because people don't actually read anymore. So it's easy to connect symbols and language to people and then control them through that narrative warfare, which I think is very important during this time. But, and of course, during Nixon era, they admitted that they wanted to, they couldn't say this is a war on civil war blacks, but they can associate hippies with weed, and they can associate blacks with crack, and they can have a war on drugs. And these things are important because it also goes back into our history and it reframes us based on who we really are, right? I was just watching the movie Sinners, and in there was so much hoodoo, right? And spiritual warfare. And we utilize things for so many different reasons as far as our ability to understand nature, right? And utilize nature as a technology, either to optimize, enhance ourselves, to have connection with the divine, right? And every civilization used some kind of drugs, right? But the narrative around that drug use was different. Now, you, somebody who admittedly utilized heroin, right, in your book.
And other drugs. I love drugs. You'll tell them,
no. Well, he admittedly loves drugs, and it sounds like y'all do too. So, number one, as you were doing your research, what made you come to the point to say, instead of just studying it, right, I actually need to use heroin in order to get my point across?
Well, yeah. So I study drugs, and so it's a remarkable thing to publish hundreds of scientific papers on drugs and not know anything about the effects of drugs, like to actually have tried these drugs. And so it was a gap in my knowledge. And so I thought, like, well, why don't I know anything about how heroin feels? Because I had believed the hype. And so I had to face myself and say, damn, you tell the other people don't be fooled by what folks say, but you were fooled by it too. In fact, so much, you won't even just try this. And you know pharmacology, you know the dose, you know all these things, and you won't try it. So I had to face myself. And then when I faced myself, I was like, it's just like you think. I've been lied to. That's just how it is. I've been lied to. And the thing about it is that when we think about drugs, we don't need really white supremacy for that. Our own community, we believe that, and we are the ones policing our community about drugs, saying drugs are bad. I mean, my mom, for example, my mom is 85 years old, and I love her to death. But, you know, when I go home, Miami, and see my mom, you know, it's a reflex to say, yeah, man, those drugs ain't nothing to fuck with. You know, that's why your cousin, whatever. And then I have to say to my mom, be like, damn, mom, you know, you got this lifestyle because of what I do, because of drugs. You know, drugs made us do well. And then, you know, she has to like say, all right, I'll shut the fuck up around you. And when you leave, then I'll go back to besmirching people who do drugs. But it's a funny thing. It's just the reflex in the community.
Mm-hmm. Okay, what about when I think about cognitive security, right, and I think about a person being in a state of shame or insecurity or depression or anxiety or stressed out, they are targets to be easily manipulated, swayed, or influenced, right? The reality can be distorted. So these are usually the populations who people consider to have addictive behaviors because the root of their issue is never dealt with. So they end up self-diagnosing, utilizing drugs, but never getting to the root of it, right? And so in the lieu of being able to enjoy life, they utilize drugs, right, to either escape or not go through and deal with the problem, but to feel stimulated in life, right? So I know people that can't focus. So since they can't focus, they're going to watch TV, right? Since I can't focus and get an idea out of my head and get the stimulation from that willpower of producing something into reality as a man, then I'm going to utilize drug use that gives me that same sense of stimulation, right? Which can also go to sex. It can go to drugs. It can go to social media. It can go to all of these different things, which can lead to hypofrontality, right? To where it can affect your decision-making. It can affect who you are. So how do we vary this conversation for people who are soft targets, who are in a lower phase of life versus somebody who may have community, who have support, who have a job? Because these are things that affect the decisions we make to use jobs and to use drugs or consistently use drugs.
Yeah, I think that's a myth, that kind of thing. Let's just start with children, because that's who people worry about. So if you have a child who's using a drug, and we all, you know, I have kids and we all are like, we worry about that. But we blame drugs when it's not a drug problem. It's a supervision problem. It's a parental problem. People have to parent. But it's easy to say it's a drug because that same kid might spend too much time on social media, too much time playing video games, but we're talking about drugs. And so that's the kind of mythology that that's easy. Drug addiction oftentimes have nothing to do with drugs. It has a lot to do with all these other issues. And we stop. If there's a drug, we just stop looking. And then we act like we got it and you don't have it. It's just that what we do is we are perpetuating the same bullshit mythology that, for example, Public Enemy used to make a song. By the way, I grew up with Public Enemy and loved Public Enemy and not realizing the harm that they were doing to the community by saying shit like brothers who do crack or whatever. They were just besmirching these brothers and allowing the government to pass these awful laws that punish crack 100 times more than powder cocaine. We all played into that shit. And then we failed to look at our responsibility. And that's why it still happens. Because we are saying that drugs are so bad. And the government is like, yeah, you're right. Let's make sure we punish that shit more harshly and we'll put the police in your communities. And that's what happened.
Now, there's a holistic view to look at that, right? Because one of it is how the government utilizes the leverage, the narrative around it, right? For their own nefarious agenda. Then there is the actual person that, you know, makes the decision to use drugs for whatever reason, right? Then there is everybody's personal experience as well of knowing somebody who's done crack, who's done some what's considered to be hard drug, if you will, right? And how that has affected their life to where the drug becomes the center of their life and they only find joy.
That doesn't happen. I mean, that's, again, that's a mythology. You know, like when we talk about drug being the center of people's lives, You really have to look at people's lives. I know that's what people who write movies, they write that bullshit. I know people who write songs write that bullshit. People who do comedy write that. But that doesn't happen. Like the drugs taking someone's, it happens to three people. And when that happens to those three people, you have much bigger problems than drugs. And we shouldn't even be talking about drugs in that case. But that's where the public discourse is at. And that's why we never actually get to solving people's problems. And that's what we love to do. Because if you don't get to what the real issues are, that means that the government doesn't have to face any of the don't have to do shit for the people. And so this mythology about like drugs taking over people's lives, that's crazy. I mean, that is just absolutely crazy. And we act like that's a real thing. That ain't a real thing. I mean, this is somebody who gives drugs to people in the lab, thousands of doses to people in the lab, and has studied people. That just doesn't happen.
I hear you, but I know a lot of crackheads. Yeah, you know I mean, and I know a lot of people from a personal experience to where I've seen them do drugs.
See, now this is,
and I've seen them.
That's
well, I'm giving the perspective of people that's listening that's going to say the same thing.
What?
Right?
That's dangerous.
But it's important. Let me get this off.
Okay.
It's important because there's a real lived personal experience that people have with individuals that they know have used drugs. They seen them going to prostitution.
Wait a second.
Seen them going to,
you're talking to a black man from Miami.
That's fine. I'm a black man from
Miami in the 1980s, coming up in the 1980s.
Let me finish my point, though, respectfully, right? When we dealing with individuals who are various different perspectives, right? My platform is global, so it's going to be people from all different backgrounds.
I'm global too, brother.
Bro, I'm just, it's not an ego thing. It's not a battle. I'm just giving you perspective.
Just letting
you know. In nuance and context on why I'm saying what I'm saying before we continue with the dialogue, right? It's, everything is done for a reason, right? Because we're having a conversation on something that hits hard home for a lot of people, right? And some people will be immediately triggered and turned off versus I want to make sure I give them the nuance in the conversation and make sure that what they're thinking is also addressed, right?
Well, I certainly have done that in my books.
I'm sure, but I'm going to be introducing a new audience, if you will, right, to introducing you to a new audience as we're having this conversation about drug use. And you are actively in work that dispels ideas, myths, and narratives that are people head. So I want to make sure that we get to some of the nuanced points that's going to be the hardest for people to get over, right? So growing up in communities, when you see people, right, whether it's a child that's utilizing an iPad and they're over-scrolling versus being in nature, right, or being in real life, yeah, it's not the iPad that's evil, but it is the effect that it has on their behavior. Right. Where it can dispel, you know, the ability to be more social, and it can make people feel lonely. And in lieu of that loneliness, we utilize the machine or utilize the drug. The drug itself is just, you know, this idea and this representation of something that we're using because we're not joyed. We're not fulfilled. Right. And a lot of people do lack that discipline. And there is various different minds. Everybody's not the same. So some minds do and are stronger. Right. And some minds are weaker and some people are going through real life things. So I believe that the conversation has always need to address, right, people of different mental resilience and people of different mental discipline at the same time. But the question more so is when it comes to a people who have a lot of, let's say, mental health issues, right? When it comes to black men specifically, who are the highest rate of depression, suicide, cancer rates, high blood pressure, things of that nature, it does make that population more susceptible. Does drug use enhance our resilience, right? Or does it make us greater soft targets to continue to be in these statistics that are negative for our people?
All right. So I have to give you all a background. So I do this a lot speaking, so I get tired of this shit. I get tired of going back in my background. So I was in the Air Force between 1984 and 1988. Grew up in Miami. Miami was the cocaine capital at that time. Black men don't make it out of Miami. If you know anything about Miami, Miami is the real hood. And we got all these black people, but we don't have any political power. Cubans make sure of that. If you know anything about Miami, you know about the 1980 riots after Arthur McDuffie was killed by the police. You know about the 1984 riots after Neville Johnson was killed by the police. Miami is hell. Now, the reason why this causes me to be impatient. It's because I have cousins. I have a son. I have a number of people. My cousin just died, who's same age as me, got caught up in the system that they said it was drugs. It wasn't drugs.
It was the system. It was racism that put this 15-year-old kid in jail for some shit that was minor. One of my friends just...
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ12. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ12 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Got out of jail, spent 41 years in jail, went in when he was 14. Nobody died in the commission of his crime. They said it was drugs. They told us it was drugs. That's why I studied drugs. I studied drugs so I could solve the crack problem. Along the way, I discovered we've been hoodwinked. You know, people use crack. Yeah, that's true. But it wasn't crack that made sure they didn't have a job. It wasn't crack that repossessed people's houses. It wasn't crack that kept us out of Miami Beach. It was white racism. But yet we're talking about crack. And so it frustrates the fuck out of me when I have to talk about crack as if it's the problem, when I know it's not the problem. I give crack as part of my job to people in the lab and carefully study their behaviors. I've given literally thousands of doses of crack to people and studied their behavior and published it in the scientific literature. Do you think my federal government would allow me to do that if crack was causing all these problems? Not no, but fuck no. So I get impatient when I hear like crack is a problem, when I know that people have real problems and it ain't crap.
But there's still no benefits to black people doing crack.
That's a damn lie.
It's not a lie.
I mean, you never had cocaine if you say some dumb shit like that. I mean,
first of all, respectfully, don't call what I say dumb, because you got to check that shit at the door.
Cocaine.
Now, when cocaine. I say there's no value to it because the average black man is not walking around with the job, in the wealth, in the discipline, in the power, and you can't tell me that our use of crack is going to be beneficial to us empowering ourselves and going against systematic racism and dealing with these devils. I don't care what kind of goddamn research you say. It ain't going to turn a man into a soldier to take care of his family.
Do you know what benefit means? Do you know what that means? Do you know what the fuck that means?
Yeah, I know what the fuck it means.
It means positive effect. That's what it means. And when you smoke cocaine, there's a positive effect. That's what it means.
It ain't no positive effect. Ain't no positive effect on us collectively.
Ari, we're going to have to respect each other. And we can have an intellectual debate. I'd ask that we, and I like saying curse words, but just so that we can keep the tone and tenor collegial, I'd ask that we not curse at each other. If you guys would like to continue listening to this conversation, give me a hand. We care about these things and we care about our people, and it gets emotional. You're seeing a conversation take place and we're going to continue to have it. Thank you, gentlemen.
I can disagree and still respect an individual. It's not emotional to the point where things get beyond it.
You know, I apologize, man. You know, that ain't...
That ain't right. It ain't right.
This is our first time meeting on stage, so.
But like
intellectual
like I told you all earlier, I try to take responsibility for my shit, and you know I can't disrespect people, but I make mistakes, right? And as a result, I own my shit. I'm sorry.
It's all love.
Yeah.
I think what you are saying, there's a lot of importance in it, specifically as we talk about narrative warfare, right? Because I think that there's so many things that we believe about ourselves because of the terms that they use and connected us to, right? And this is why I actually love the conversation and I want it to be flushed out, because some people, they may just take a clip of this. They might not read your book. They might not listen to the whole thing. So social media is a very irresponsible place. And I believe that you are trying to give us more responsibility and take cognitive ownership on the things that we do, but also understand how history has perverted things, right? And the connection to them, right? When we go look at ancient Kemet, right? And how they utilize Mandrake, or we go look at Native Americans and how they utilize Hape, or we go look at any of these indigenous populations, right? And how they still built civilizations and had a connection to the cosmos. It was very powerful. But then when we look at modern day, there's political propaganda connected to things. There's capitalism, there's agendas. And we don't realize how we're being used because of the effects that living in this reality has done to us, right? If we can get a little more into the science of, you said that only, or you said that 80 to 90% of people who utilize drugs are not addicted, right? What was some of that research that led you to that, right? And how did that epiphany affect you to want to get that out to people?
Yeah, so this is, every year we do epidemiological studies. People publish these studies and they do these surveys and they figure out people who use, the number of people who use, the number of people who have problems. And every year they come back with these numbers saying that the majority of people who use drugs don't have a problem. Just think about alcohol. There are people who use alcohol who have a problem. There are some, but that's a small minority. The same is true with heroin. Even though when we think about the two drugs, one is legal and another is not legal. And so that means that the ones people who use the drug like heroin have to be more committed compared to somebody who use alcohol, because alcohol is available. But these data about addiction rates are published every year. And people in science who study this, they know this, but we don't emphasize that because we emphasize the negative effects of drugs. When we emphasize the negative effects of drugs, we do this because the National Institute on Health funds the studies. And the National Institute on Health, National Institute on Drug Abuse, they focus on pathology, the bad things that happen with drugs. So they are overemphasized. They are overemphasized so they can continue to be funded. Few people are looking at the beneficial effects of drugs.
Do you think that Ibogaine or Iboga should be utilized therapeutically? Right? I know that is considered to be illegal, right, in this country. But what do you think would be the effects if people, and can you explain to people scientifically what Iboga is? But what do you think would be the benefits if there was mass use and utility of Iboga?
Iboga comes from a shrub in East Africa, and people use it there as a rite of passage. But then there have been people in the West who says that Iboga could help people with drug addiction, help cure their drug addiction, and there is little evidence to support it, but that's okay. If people think it works for them, that's fine. The cure for drug addiction in many cases is making sure people have what they seek. For example, in a place like Switzerland, as part of treatment for people who have heroin addiction, they get doses of heroin that are provided by the state. They have a home. The vast majority of them work. They have a social worker. They have their general practitioner. They are a lot more happy than Americans. And so We know how to do this, but in America, we just don't want to do this. But this has been going on in Switzerland for more than 35 years.
And in those areas where they have deregulated and destigmatized a lot of drug use, I did see where overdose has decreases, right? And of course, there was less stigmatization around it. So there was a lot more help that people were getting for issues, right? And so what do you believe would be that effect? Or if I guess that is the effect, if we're looking at that as a study, right? If America were to deregulate, right, and completely make drugs legal, right, based on what we've seen in other countries, how would America respond? Would it be beneficial to us, right? Or would it be at a detriment? Would it be politically controlled by pharmaceutical companies, right? And then also kind of a lot of people smoke nowadays, and even psilocybin is becoming very popular. But what's the difference between when a lab gets hold of it versus something that's naturally grown, right? We see THC skyrocketing, right, inside of marijuana because people in the lab tweaking it because they want to make sure that they can sell something that gets people hired. So is it something that you recommend as far as people smoking naturally, right? Or is there any concern that you have when it comes towards people selling it in dispensaries?
So if we think about the willow bark, that's where we get aspirin from. So people can eat the bark and it will take a lot of it for them to relieve their pain, or you can isolate the active compound and then you have aspirin, and that's beneficial. So the lab certainly can be beneficial in many respects. If you enhance the potency of something, that means that some people will have to smoke less. They take in less, which is better for the lungs in some cases. So it all depends what people's goals are. And so if we think about the government legally regulating drugs, this is more of an issue of just human rights and bodily autonomy. We say, as an adult, you can live your life like you see fit. If that's the case, the government's job is to do just like we do with alcohol, and alcohol probably better because we want to make sure that the alcohol is pure. We want to make sure there are regulations that what you put in a bottle is not so much that people could easily kill themselves. The government regulates that. The same should be true with these other substances that people seek, because our countries say that we are free. And as Americans, we say dumb shit like we are the freest country on the world and on the planet. But yet you can't go and buy what you want. And so whereas other places, they can do that more so. So you're not the freest country on the planet.
Keys, how you feeling right now, man?
And I got that Superman. I'm feeling good, man. You know what I'm talking about?
That's part of being rooted to me, is being able to, like I said, give back.
I want to have experiences to where it builds a foster community.
What can we do to turn Oakland around and take it to the place it needs to be?
So I want new rituals to where, yeah, we bring community together. We have high-level stimulating conversation that makes you think. And that thinking mind makes you much harder to control.
We're not getting it as much as we should.
I listen upon our Black leaders
because I believe in ancestral energy.
I try to do things that bring me joy.
Y'all tried your chocolate.
When you eat that as opposed to a regular piece of Hershey's chocolate, and I start being a lot more health conscious.
For me, it's a lifestyle.
It actually aligns with my personal values.
I knew that you were doing this series where you go to coffee shops around and, you know, have conversations.
Because it's not based on trauma. It's not based on a history. And when you start thinking like that, it positions you completely different in the future.
It's hard to find like-minded people.
But we're not taught about how to move about that in ourselves.
We make good money, but I feel like we're not free still.
People judge you by like how you look, but they don't really know who you are.
Get their number. Find out exactly why they showed up. It's all world building. People are looking what connects, what's vital, and what's values. We've been going dumb for a minute. You understand me? It's time to go smart for a second. Maybe take a sip of some of that Superman come to you.
When it comes to people having that autonomy, do people really have autonomy, right? In a sense that, like, people nowadays are in the crowd mind, easily swayed, right? Especially on social media, right? It's a completely new world as far as the way you're able to bend somebody's reality and stir the direction of their thought, right? And there's this consistent decreasing of will, because if I was to think about an ancient time, somebody utilizing a drug and they're in nature or they're in an environment, right, where the architecture is aspirational, right, and they're in a space to where it will continue to stimulate them to be human, versus in today's time, you go into the city, you worrying about what Trump doing, you worrying about tariffs, you worrying about China, you worrying about the future, you worrying about all of these new things that the brain was never developed to worry about, right? We have information warfare where we have too many things going on in our head to where we can't focus and appreciate the present moment, right? This makes people susceptible, again, to easily being swayed and manipulated. So do people truly have autonomy when it comes to drug use? Because the same thing when it comes to food, right? Same thing when it comes to anything. We market things and do neuroscience research to make the behavior more addicting, to keep you in this loop on social media, right? It's been studied and shown that social media is not about free will, right? Every marketing company is utilizing billions of dollars to keep you using their product, to make sure you don't have this autonomy at any point in time when you can just quit. So in the age right today where we have more information on the brain psychologically, how does a person have autonomy to know the right doses and usage and discipline that they should have in this time?
Yeah, that hasn't changed. You can't be dumb and be in the world and expect to do well in the world. I mean, we've always had dumb people in the world, and today is no different. Our brain is equipped to deal with all this that's going on. That's what separates us from other animals. But it requires work. I mean, you know, I have kids, and we expect them to negotiate social media and the world in a certain way. But that's work. And there's no shortcuts for work in terms of thinking. There's a lot of people who don't want to think. And yeah, that's right. They're going to have a hard time in this world. And frankly, my message is not for people who don't think. And so there's a lot of people like that, unfortunately. But our brain is remarkable. It's remarkable.
So you just a very tough love, save yourself type of person.
No. I got love for people. I got love for people who want to do this. Nothing but love. But there are no shortcuts. I played pro ball too, basketball. I mean, if you're not producing, you got to be on the bench. That's the same thing here. But if you produce it, I'm with you. I'm there with you. I'm here. I mean, as Reggie pointed out, I didn't have to be here. I could be somewhere getting high. I mean, I'm here. So you know, this is real. Yeah. I'm here because I care.
When people use like mushrooms and DMT and things of that nature, they often say like they go meet God, right? I'm not sure what your belief is around God as a scientist, right? But what is that effect that people are having? What is that experience that people are having when they are taking DMT or they're utilizing psilocybin and they're coming back with these experiences, these divine experiences?
You know, I don't know what each individual person is having, but you know, the fact that they are having some altered perception, some altered reality that they enjoy, more power to them. Whatever they're calling their God, mad prop to them, they're having a good time, they treat people better. Long as they're treating people better, more power to you. But I don't know exactly what they're experiencing, because as you point out, I don't believe in the magic of God, of some Virgin Mary who gave birth to some whatever. I don't believe in that magic.
Okay. But is there any science around it? Like, especially when you come in encounter with mushrooms, anytime I am in the room with mushrooms, I feel them. There's a gut reaction that happens, right? What's that science that happens to where you automatically know? Is there spores in the air, right? Is there some gut connectivity to, right, the mycelium network? Why is it that I get that feeling? Or is that just me tripping?
Yeah, I think you might have some feeling about it, but I don't know. It's not a pharmacological feeling. I know that, but I don't know what really.
Yeah,
I can't answer.
I was doing some research on it, and they was talking about this olfactory bug that happens, right? To where whether you are smelling it and it's a visible smell and you know it or not, the body is preparing itself, right? And emulating the experiences that you have when you're on psilocybin, right? So I can kind of think of it in that capacity.
Did they have data to show that your olfaction neurons are actually active when you're in the room, or they're just speculating? I think that somebody's speculating, and that this is what happens with neuroscience. A lot of people speculate, and it sounds good to people who don't know, but it's oftentimes just crap.
Mm. But this is how we get theories, and then this is how we either put funding behind the research to figure out if it's real or not. Because I do think one of the, like, I was having a conversation with this molecular biologist, and her boyfriend is a astrophysicist, right? And so it's a group of them. It's like a brotherhood of physicists. And there's people within her research group that does marine work. And they've been trying to figure out how to get funding, right? Because a lot of the things that they believe in, that they can't work on any of these passion projects. And the things that we believe are considered pseudoscience. And typically when you go look at it, it's because there hasn't been much research on it, which means that there haven't been much funding, right? So is there any, I guess, advice you can give, right, for somebody that's in the research field right now that wants to get funding, right, to do some of this research on some of these theories that I think can bring validation more to our speculation around drugs?
Well, if anybody like is a scientist and doing research, they know that they got to first demonstrate that they can actually do the science before they get funded. So and you do this by being in labs that has done that. You have preliminary data, and your preliminary data says that you can do it and somebody might fund you. But if you don't have preliminary data, the likelihood of you getting funded might be lower.
So how does a person figure out usage and dosage, right? That's to their tolerant level, right? And is there any caution that you do give people who use drugs?
Yeah, I mean, you know, we published all these things like doses. All of this is published in the scientific literature. And I put this in my books. And the main thing is that people need to make sure they got what they think they have. And they can't be stupid, just like you can't be stupid when you drink alcohol or do any psychoactive substance, or when you get behind a car. You have to know what you're doing.
I think in the terms of the fact that we do live in an age where you can almost be addicted to anything in that same sense, right? To your phone, because most people, they would never come here if they lost their phone today, right? They feel empty without it, right? They feel a deep connection to it, right? To coffee, right? It's considered one to be the most addictive things, right? To Netflix binge watching, right? All of these things are filling a gap and making you feel something today. And so I think that there's importance for like this cognitive firewall to have this level of self-awareness. People always talk about being gaslit, but I don't believe in being gaslit. I believe it's just self-awareness, right? And so when somebody may listen to this conversation, they may feel like they're being gaslit to do something or the other, but without that level of self-awareness, anything can control and manipulate you. And I believe that we're no longer going to live in a society that's soft, that's going to tell you things in a way that you want them to be heard. And we've opened up the Pandora's box that's democratized access almost to everything. So without, I believe, tough conversations on how the average mind can empower themselves in the way that they use things, you're going to find bias towards what you want to believe anyway, right? For me, I like to study, and this is why I like this conversation, because I like studying the things that I disagree with, to find myself in the middle, right? I'm a very logic system ordered person, right? If there's science and there's research behind it, then it's nothing to do with my belief, but then it goes to the weaponization of that, right? We've been talking about narratives a lot, right? To where, yes, this person uses drug, but it's not so much about their drug use. It's about how we can use the fact that they use a particular type of drug, how we can frame it for our agenda. So I think that's where the carefulness comes in, and understanding how we're being studied. There's data that's being taken about what we use, what we consume. And then there's people that will utilize that data
to try to control us or use it for their agenda, right? When it comes to the future of drugs, right, to where we're seeing them decriminalized all over, right? We're seeing ketamine starting to pop up, right? And there's a lot of therapies that's being used in that particular regard. What do you believe? Let's say when somebody is talking about stress, specific, because it sounds like you utilize specific drugs for specific reasons, so it would never be a general use case or one over the other. But if we're talking about stress and loneliness and depression, right, which one would you recommend? Do you recommend people being in settings to where they're shamans, where they're being around doctors? Do you represent a guided usage, right? What does your science say?
Yeah, I really recommend that. So like if people are trying to get experiences, you want to make sure that they're with people who actually know something, right? That's number one. But I really recommend that people gain the knowledge themselves, seek the knowledge, read, try and figure this out for themselves. But I want to just say something about drugs being decriminalized or we're being liberalizing our policies. We're only liberalizing policies for certain drugs. So the number of people in the United States who are arrested for drugs every year is about a million people. That has not changed, even as our drug policy has changed. What we've done, starting in about 2013, the number of people being arrested for cannabis has dramatically dropped, whereas the number of people who are being arrested for methamphetamine has dramatically increased. So we have increased the arrest of some drugs and decreased the arrest of others. But the people who are being arrested for drugs are the same. Mexican Americans and Black folks, same people.
So the weaponization of drug narrative, right, and drug use has affected us more than any community. And they've impacted us more than the actual drug use, right? I think that we can 100% both agree on that, that the incarceration rates have affected us more than people would say the actual crack affected us, right? And I think in this way, you can look at same thing when it comes to marijuana or any other thing. This way you can understand how these things have been weaponized and used against our community specifically. Because when they say the harm is the drug, yet you take a man and you lock him up and you throw him in a dark cage, right? And you essentially torture his mind, and he's supposed to come out as a productive citizen, and then he can't get a job, and then you're increasing his recidivism rate. That's the harmful cycle that you're putting people in. But then you want to criminalize the drug so that you can put them under this narrative to continue to oppress them, dehumanize them, so that anything that they do looks like it's justifiable, right? When we do something against them, this is how we stop seeing ourselves as human. We stop seeing ourselves seeking an experience and a connection, right, and stimulation, and we stop going to the result of why people need these connections, right? When we have a lack of jobs and a lack of opportunity, right, and a lack of community and fellowship, loneliness is the epidemic of our time. People are disconnected from other people. There's no social connection.
There's no social connection, Keys, and this is high-level conversation. Tap in with the guy. It's 19 keys above 19. The execution of knowledge is power.
Teaching me how to be a guy.
From a boy to a man, and ultimately back to your natural state of being.
Hugh Lounge in Boston.
Late night, everybody was taking shots and enjoying themselves. This morning, we was actually taking shots of coffee, re-stimulating ourselves and having a connection.
It's not just networking, but it's real connection. Having a tribe, having a friend group.
My energy is like on high frequency here.
We want God to work for us, but we don't work for God.
Because I hear a lot of people say, I'm just supporting you. I'm like, no, support yourself.
When I talk about Supermind, it's making those conversations even higher level.
Definitely high level vibes, high level energy.
I thought it was so dope, I had to come out.
I love the coffee. It has lion's mane and other things that help with mental focus and clarity.
The coffee, the cordyceps, the lion's mane, we're trying to get you to activate the clarity in yourself because you're lost right now.
Self-love is a reflection of all love. So first I want to thank 19 Keys because he helped me fall more in love with myself.
The goal is just optimizing on whatever your skills and gift are at the highest level.
We all have a starting point, and everybody's starting point is going to be different.
when I'm doing all this work behind the scenes, I gotta get on my Superman coffee to keep me going.
I think it's such an awesome opportunity to come and really have an intimate conversation.
There's no way that I couldn't show up, show out.
Thanks to Rob Hugh Lounge in Boston, we was able to have a cup of coffee with the community. If you get some of that Supermind coffee, it's joy in a cup. Joy in a cup. Joy in a cup. Joy in a cup.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ12. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ12 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.